the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Kridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, are as freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts, the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 great prohibitive precepts, not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here at my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I look at the grip of karma.
Grip of karma.
Yeah. So I saw it. I thought I'd work backwards because as I was sitting here, it actually broke. Mm. You know, like how all of a sudden you're just paying attention to the breath, and then I can hear the stream, and, and then it's like I watched that. It was just a lovely feeling. And then, you know, I watched it. I really wish I could live here all the time. Why can't I? And, you know, when I was watching, I saw it the other day pretty strongly. Like, I can laugh now, but this, you know, the incessant push toward, I call it the incessant resistance to what is, but the push to have what you want or whatever that little.
Well, I think I deserve.
Yeah. So that's, for some part of me, that feels a little bit harsh. Although it's so true. It's very true.
Certainly when it feels like it's me, but when we see it in the context of.
Yeah, that's true.
To
yes.
What, yeah.
And it's so, it was tricky the other day because it will take good things.
Uh-huh.
And that I'm pushing for that.
Yeah.
So I had this experience. I'll tell you the content because it's kind of funny. I had this experience of getting a call at the end of the day on Wednesday that Sophia needed to go get an x-ray.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I got this. I got taken out. She doesn't need an x-ray.
Uh-huh.
Because she's already had x-rays periodically and she falls all the time. And I know that she's fine.
Right.
So I say that to the humans who have been to the doctor. It's late at night. Let's watch her. See how she does. And I know down deep. So it's going, you know. I know down deep. First of all, it doesn't fit my schedule. And I got plans.
This is all I deserve.
Exactly. But, of course, I don't really know that. But the thing that got really fascinating was, I don't know, like the sensations in the body were like, I mean, it tried to find every single way to not have to get this x-ray. Well, we'll talk to this, you know, because I work with the doctor who they met, you know, the husband and the child met with last night, and I'll tell him, you know, but he was actually sick. So I couldn't talk to him. Well, I'll talk to the nurses then, because they were there, you know, and they're like, well, it does say probably the only way to rule it out is, and I'm like, but she's been, you know, I'm trying to explain. Like, and then I had to, you know, work the schedule and cancel some things, and we're driving to the x-ray, and I'm like, breathing. And then, of course, I'm not breathing, right? I'm like, you know. But it was amazing, the sensations in the body of, this should not be happening. And I could simultaneously, I did have moments of, well, this is it, you know, and then I could feel the resistance, and then there was this beating myself up for being resistant, you know, well, you know, you should just be bigger than this, because this is it, except it was like it was stuck. I don't know if you ever had that feeling of like the engine or the mechanism of acceptance. I don't know, there was no acceptance for this is it. So there was no acceptance for the stuckness.
Exactly.
That's what it was.
Yeah. So I can really see where that, I think you said the resistance to what is kind of the definition.
Yeah, there it is, right?
So, you know, a fair amount of evidence, like starting the night before, that this is what is. But we don't, quote, accept that.
Right.
No, I don't, that's not what I want.
Right.
That's not how I want it to go.
And I know.
And I know.
This isn't really it.
Yeah. So all of those things that the system does to keep what I want or what I know in place, and then just gradually it becomes clear.
right. But there's not the letting go yet. I can feel the distinct letting go. Not that I haven't let go other times, because actually it ended up broken. But so then there's a lot like, oh my gosh, thank goodness I took her. You know,
Then there's that place of, oh, maybe we are being cared for after all.
But the thing I think that I'm seeing as I'm looking at it is there's no room for what's going on here.
Yeah.
It can't, what's going on here, like the resistance, the kind of the laughing at it and the wishing it was different and the trying to make it different, you know, that can't all be okay too.
Right.
You know, what ego does is take acceptance and define it to mean, well, if you were just accepting, you just drive to the appointment.
Yeah. Look, this is what is. What is
right.
You are doing this.
Exactly.
So why can't you just let go?
Right.
What is.
Exactly. Right. That's what happened.
But the really Aikido move is the one you're pointing at, which is that, yep, and I hate it. And I didn't want to go this way.
Yeah. And I have other things on my plate. I mean, I have a schedule of spiritual things that had to be canceled.
Yeah.
You know, but the ego, that's the Aikido move.
Yeah.
The Aikido move. Yeah, and I don't think I really saw it till just right now when you reflected it. Because there was just sort of, the way ego worked was, I took her, I of course accepted it, and you know, went on with my day, and then found out the next day, at the end of that day, that it was actually broken. But that relief was more just like, well, thank goodness I took her.
Yeah.
It wasn't a...
Not the thing.
It's
the
not the thing. The whole process.
Yeah.
It was just like, whew. And it was more probably because I really would have gotten beaten bloody if I were taking her on Saturday or whatever, because now the, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
So it was more ego's relief, not...
Yeah. It's interesting because as you lay it out, it's almost like it's the ultimate illusion of a separation, right? You know, I can accept this and I can accept that, and I can, but I can't accept me and how that I'm a conditioned human and that I do these conditioned things.
Yeah.
So it's the ultimate, like, that's the piece that's going to be kept out of acceptance is that I'm conditioned. And so there are these conditioned reactions. And if that's perfectly all right, wow, I mean, the whole thing is acceptable.
Yeah. 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 That was really helpful.
Thank you.
Anna.
I'm trying to not think about whether ego is talking or not, but just always put my hands out. And while I almost passed out during meditation, I would say no blood in my brain or something. I couldn't even, it was really scary. I almost had to walk out, or I almost passed out. And now I'm still feeling a little weird.
A little lightheaded, kind of.
Yeah.
You said it felt like no blood in the brain.
Yeah, it felt like absolutely no.
And that felt a little scary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. wearing.
So very scary.
I mean, I really felt like I couldn't sit anymore. Uh-huh. But then I subsided after a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which seems kind of big to see that the voice was saying you can't sit through it, and actually you did.
Yeah, very, yeah.
We just, see, that's kind of back to what Susan was just saying. That's the thing that always gets tagged on the end of it, doesn't it? Well, barely. Right? Because it's something I think Ashwini points out frequently where, you know, so I'm a little kid and I'm told to clean my room and I don't really want to clean my room, but I clean my room, but I wasn't happy about it, so I don't get credit for it because I didn't do it cheerfully, right? But so we're up against a lot in spiritual practice, right? I mean, sometimes it's great and it's, you know, we see all these things and it's super fun, and other times it really isn't. Sometimes it literally or metaphorically feels like, I'm going to pass out. This is hard. And we sit through it. And it seems so important to really acknowledge that we're sitting through it, because that's huge. That's everything. That's the training. You know, the voice wants to be in control of our lives, and often is. And what we're training to do is to prove to ourselves that, in fact, it isn't. It doesn't need to be in charge of our lives. So doing something like sitting through meditation when this really big thing happens is a lot to acknowledge. The voice wants to say, well, yeah, but barely. I mean, you almost did get up, but you didn't.
And I wonder, it might have been kinder if I would have gotten up, I think.
Maybe. We don't know, do we?
Yeah. It was like a physical thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Then just like before, I mean, I thought I couldn't do it either with meditation, but those were just racing ego thoughts. You know, mm-hmm. But this temple was just more physical. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it will be interesting for you to see as you continue to work with that, you know, should that come up again, that often what people will talk about is that, you know, when someone makes a commitment like, say, coming to the monastery for a month, that's a big commitment, right? And the voices, the system that's used to being in control of our lives is not going to care for that decision. And so often, it will start to up the stakes. So if it can't get us in this way, then it will attempt to shift to something that feels more real and more true and scarier and more important.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, you absolutely would not be the first person to pass out in meditation at all.
No?
No, absolutely not. No. In fact, that's the reason someone sits here.
Okay.
You notice that everyone else turns and faces the blank white wall. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity, it's not always how it happens, but the opportunity for us when we're sitting there is to completely let go into the moment and be just right here. And part of the reason we're able to do that is that there is someone sitting here who's not facing the wall. Mm-hmm. And part of the role of the person sitting here is to hold the safety and the well-being of everyone in the room. And so you've heard us say a number of times, because you've been on retreat many times, that everything goes in the meditation hall. Everything. And that's important mostly because it's a symbol, it's the foundation of what we're practicing, which is the unconditional. So very often people will feel like they're going to throw up, or they'll feel like they're going to faint, or they do faint, mm-hmm. or they cry, or they start coughing, they can't stop coughing. And all of those things are things that sort of in, quote, polite society, we're conditioned to think, well, okay, you know what, that's a nice idea, that's to sit quietly in the meditation hall, but I can't now, I need to get up and leave. And, you know, depending on a person's karma, it will be because I'm embarrassed, or because I don't want to be a bother, or because of whatever it is, right? But what the great opportunity we have, the gift of the meditation hall, is that to stay through all of it, and to know that whatever happens, and it has happened. I've been here a number of years, and it's happened. Everything you can think about, it's happened. And it's been all right. It's completely all right. And we prove to ourselves that there's nothing that can happen that we don't have to abandon ourselves for. Often there will be a lot that goes on around it, but that we can stay with ourselves through it, that practice will stay with us through it, that we can be supported through it. And a lot of times for folks it can shift. You'll see it when it happens on a retreat. It can shift from, oh God, I hope that thing doesn't happen, sort of a conditional relationship with life, to, wow, actually, not only is it all right that it happens, but in a way I'm hoping that all those things that are supposedly unacceptable, like Susan was just pointing at, do begin to happen, because especially in the container of being physically at the monastery, the opportunity to grow that circle of acceptance is really, there's a lot of support for it. You get a sense of it?
Yeah.
Where does that leave you?
I don't know, tears are coming up again.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of blurriness right now.
Yeah. And there's that opportunity, right? To just be with that human who's having the emotion come up, who's having the blurriness, and to let her know that's all right. That's absolutely part of it. None of it is a mistake.
Yeah.
I can really relate to that process of, you know, when things get really real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To think, okay, I've heard that, you know, things can happen like this, but this is different.
This is different. Not to me.
Not to me.
That's an
outline. Maybe someone else, you know, can drop the voice of someone else.
Yeah.
You know, it all gets folded into, like, but they don't really understand. I'm special. You know?
In the worst possible way.
In the worst possible way. And I, you know, I got to do something to take care of this.
Mm.
Because this is outside of what we talk about.
Uh-huh.
You know, and just, I just see that.
Somehow that there could be something outside of practice,
right.
And now, handily, that was I in charge of needing to do something about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, and it's taken a long time to just even get onto that process, because that process is so, you know, it's so hidden,
yeah.
And it's so gosh darn believable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I really am the person that can't talk about this thing because,
right. And I don't know if it's like this for you, but almost like, so let me just take care of that, and then I'll be the person.
And then I'll, yeah, exactly. If I, okay, it's all going to work as soon as I take care of this.
I'll be right with you.
You know, and I've got to take care of it.
This separate self away from practice for just a minute.
Exactly. And I got to take care of it by myself with the help of conditioned mind. And then we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
You know, oh my gosh.
Oh gosh, you know, I'm so glad what I just saw with that. We got to get this recording. But to have that sense of humor in the middle of it, kind of like Susan was pointing out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, perfect. This is one of those times. All right, good. Yeah. Finished, fine. You're my coach, so let's make a little plan on how we're going to take care of this.
Right.
Just, you know, realize how ludicrous it is.
And then to come up and present your plan with made up of conditioned mind.
Right.
It really is the... Yeah, it really is the wrong thing to do. So. Anyway, that's so funny. But I wanted to look at a little bit more was, well, it's, I think the process is one of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that, you know, it's like, you know, I realize there really is nothing to be healed, but let's just say the falling away of the junk, you know, that's standing in the way of what's authentic.
Yes, the falling away of the junk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so last night, last night I had tea with my mother. Mm-hmm. Now, my mother has not been alive for a good many years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there have been so many things that have been happening recently that just feel like life inviting a further investigation of this relationship and an opening. And so I've gone with it, and I'm just, you know, one of the inexplicable things, like a picture of my mom showing up before any of this started, you know, and my mom sitting on my table, and I don't keep pictures of, and I, you know, and then suddenly there's a picture of my mom, and then it just, like, anyway, I just have been feeling a big healing in my relationship with her, and I look back on my life, I'm just realizing all of my relationships have really been with a conditioned mind. With, you know, it has just infected every relationship in my life, and so I just found myself saying, you know, I'm going to go have tea with my mom. And there was a whole lot of resistance, I saw it happening. Now I gotta do this, I gotta do that, and then this one of those things, I randomly turned on the recorder, and gosh, if the recording didn't come up about me talking to my mom and saying, Mom, I wish I had sat with you and gotten to know you.
Wow.
And I went, Wow, okay, all right. I better stop procrastinating here and get on with this, you know. And so I did. I made a nice cup of tea and, you know, her little picture there. And I started talking with her, and oh my gosh, you know, it was just a conversation we never had. And I just really got to be real with her. And you know, she was real with me, and it was just really beautiful. And I love so much. I've just been around, you know, it's like a conditioned mind would want to, you know, create suffering in relationships with people when they're alive, and then have them die and create further suffering because now they're dead and you screwed up.
And you're only in this relationship with conditioned mind,
and now you're still in a relationship with conditioned mind, and you lose big time. So, what I saw in this whole thing is that love is a power that just is never. It's never trumped by conditioned mind, and it's always available, and it's the most powerful, and it does transcend time and space. And if I ever had experience of like no separation, it's like there isn't. There just isn't.
Yeah.
You know.
But as soon as we begin to see, it's kind of the when we finally see through the veils to help through the narrow veils again and again.
Yeah.
And so there's that thing of like, oh gosh, I didn't see through it in time to.
Yeah.
But then you realize that's an illusion.
That's such an illusion.
But you sit down and have the experience.
Yeah. 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 And it's the only thing that's real. And I was struck in the whole thing too, how much it was like it was a mentoring relationship. It somehow I felt like it just deepened the mentoring relationship as well. It's like somehow not turning to look at that relationship and opening my heart was having an impact on the mentoring relationship.
That's interesting.
And being able to open my heart to what the mentor might have to say.
That it felt like it was a whole other piece of what was being held back from that potential mentoring relationship.
Because I oh my gosh, that just felt, it just felt like it took mentoring to a whole deeper level, and it's like, it's my mom, you know, and it's like, you know, I had never had an experience of my, it didn't ever feel like I, you know, had an experience of being mentored.
By her,
like at all, and then it was there, you know, and it just opened the, opened the door.
You know, what just drops in as you say that is that, you know, so she was a conditioned human, we can guess, right, and had all kinds of things obscuring her, and yet what I saw in that piece where you said kind of opening up a whole other piece of the mentoring relationship is, you know, there is a pretty powerful, unique role that one's mother plays in one's life, however that actually played out in, quote, real life, right? And that how interesting that we can guess, had the conditioning been stripped away from her, she would have had all kinds of things to offer to you.
Right. Exactly. That's what started to be the catalyst for all of this, you know, to just see that, you know, the conditioning that held her back, too.
Yeah.
And then I saw I wasn't the easiest person I was just both off. I wasn't the easiest net person. You know, you couldn't catch me to have a conversation with because I wasn't going there, you know.
You were doing what you were doing.
I didn't trust you. I didn't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, I was just not. I was running in fear, and so was she.
Mm.
You know, and there was like, well, there could never be a dialogue. You know, it just wasn't.
Yeah.
And
I'm hearing so much compassion in that.
Oh, so much compassion just arose for, everybody. And that's just been part of helping a lot of the falling away. It's just that, you know, seeing, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
how it is when, and it's true. I just see it being true for every relationship. It's just, we just want to love. And all of the junk that comes in between of that just wanting to love, it's just not what's real. And so it's just helped me. I don't know how to share it. I think I've shared this in group, but as this whole process started, I can't think of my mother anymore now without anything but feelings of love and. You know, I just feel, every time I think about it, just I say I love you, you know, which just was not happening up until like 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as this started happening, relationships with my sisters started to shift.
Huh.
And they don't know anything about this.
Huh.
I don't have any really conversation with them on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
And there's been a lot of like, not connecting, and suddenly like one sister donated like $100 to the Africa Project, the one that has just been the most anti.
Wow.
What are you doing? And then the other person came in at 105. She had to top that one. And I suspect, another person came in anonymously, and she gave half. This is so funny. I thought it was great when people started contributing big amounts, but what happens is that everybody gets afraid, like, well, I can't donate $10 because,
oh, right,
yeah, you can do that. You can't put your name down. So this person came in anonymously and donated $52.50, which is exactly half of what my second sister donated. Mm. And so I'm thinking, I wonder if that's the third sister who just couldn't like put her name to it because it was
not as much.
Not that much to do. Anyway, just to look at who, you know, who knows that energetically it's just kind of interesting that you know things start to move and
isn't that fascinating?
It's fascinating, yeah. You know.
And it reminds me of a conversation we were having on the Bridge Walk support call yesterday morning, where. You know, I think it was Sherry talking some time back on one of the shows where, you know, what we all just really want to say to each other is, I love you,
yeah,
right? But
yeah.
It's really kind of weird.
Yes.
All of that, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Gosh, I love you, I
yeah.
love you, I love you.
Yeah.
So we sort of talk about other things.
Yeah.
And we were talking about what a gift it is to have something like the work mm-hmm. in Africa, mm-hmm. the work in Kansas, mm-hmm. to connect around,
yeah.
And it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
You know, that there's that place. I had the same image when you were talking about, you know, your mom, you were running in fear, and your mom was doing the same thing, mm-hmm. where the tragedy of it is, you know, at the bottom, all we want to do is turn to each other and go, you know what, I love you, I accept you just the way you are,
yeah.
Me too, oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
But there's all this other
okay.
stuff,
yeah.
You know, most of it, well, all of it being generated by the conversation in the head,
mm-hmm.
but not realizing that, so then something that we can connect around shows up, and then all of that stuff that's
yeah.
down there is allowed to bubble up because yeah. it's sort of an acceptable way for it to do that.
I know, yeah, and it's funny because as I sat down to write my letter for the Africa Project, and, you know, and through all this, oh, what do I say, and what do I say that I didn't say last year, and, you know, how do I, you know, just keep it succinct, and, you know, and that's exactly what's real. I love you.
Yeah.
That's all I want to say is I love you.
Yeah.
And I just, and every time I see anybody, that's all I want to say is I love you. And would you join me in loving?
Yeah.
That's all I want to say is
yeah.
just to have people love with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's what I said.
Yeah.
You know, and I, it, yeah. It
sounds like it was an open invitation.
It seemed like an open invitation. And so anyway,
yeah.
that just seems to be, it seems to be what life has been saying to me lately,
mm-hmm.
and I'm, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
just starting
inviting you to tea, and you've been accepting,
and I've been mm-hmm. just starting to get the message, you know, that oh, okay, yeah, I accept,
yeah.
I accept, and I'll just I'll stop fighting it, and
yeah.
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 I will stop.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll stop siding with the fight,
mm-hmm.
like aligning myself
mm-hmm.
with the fight,
mm-hmm.
and instead just relax into the
yeah.
into the love.
Yeah, exactly, into the love. So, you know, it's great. I have to see whom. There's just an endless number of people to have tea with.
Exactly.
It's just great fun.
Yeah.
Great fun. Thank you.
Wow. I love that that description of the meditation guide and the role of the meditation guide. It was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That part about that what we have the opportunity to do is to sit facing the wall and completely let go. You don't have to be on guard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to watch out for
mm-hmm.
and
all that noise.
Yeah. And internally, as I think was being talked about, was because, gosh, I can relate to that. Just all those threats.
Physical, emotional, spiritual, every level. Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's all designed to abandon myself and to put my attention on it, always.
Yeah.
And it is so, it can feel so scary to do that. It can feel like not responding to that, even if it's just something kind of similar, like, you know, there's the sensation and then the thought of something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It might not even be something really intense.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's kind of that emotion that we might call anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that behavior of just even just going into a fantasy
mm-hmm.
or,
yeah.
you know, eating more food even though I'm not hungry or just something to move, you know,
mm-hmm.
move out of that. It's just that little sequence has happened so many times,
mm-hmm.
under the threat of, essentially, I'm going to die if I don't follow that, which is so true about it.
Right.
But until we really get that, and it seems like it's a really long process to get that, that is not me. That is not me. And it is the hero's journey, and the reason we call it that is because we have to sit through those, you're going to die, and break, and just from a science point of view, I mean, that little habitual pattern being run over and over and over again, to even know that there's a pattern there, and to have the courage to not, to interrupt it at some point and not follow it. Holy cow, like Sherry talking about grabbing onto her cushion and holding on for dear life. And then you get that experience of like, well, nothing happens.
Yeah.
I mean, even for people who, you know, have passed out, it's like, well, you'll breathe. I mean, you'll breathe.
And then they open their eyes again a couple of seconds later. Get a glass of water.
I mean, I've watched that happen over and over again. I mean, the body will take care of itself,
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we take care of each other. But it does take, I've noticed for myself, it takes a long time to trust. Because it's such a good metaphor, right? That what life is encouraging us, or what I'm getting, is I can completely let go.
Yeah.
I can completely let go of that programming and those threats, and I can completely just, like a trust fall, right back into it. But you don't just start off doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, at least I did it.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, raise our
hands. It's sort of like you get on the edge and look, and then you walk back down.
Yeah,
and then, you know, just that. And then maybe, okay, no, I don't want to do that. And you just up and down, up on the edge of that cliff.
Yeah.
And maybe I go up there and I imagine, oh, no, I don't want to. You know, sort of just this progression.
Yeah.
But there must be enough of the actual falling back, even if it's just a snap of doing that, that I know that that's true, that there is no... Well, first of all, there is no me in life.
Yeah.
There's really no one to fall into life.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems a concrete way to see the transformation of the dissolving of the illusion, of the separation between the imaginary separation between us and God.
Yeah. It's truly a process that we surrender to over time. Right? I mean, one of the images I had as you were talking is that... that's so brilliant that the body takes care of itself, and that we could, there's a way in which passing out is the body taking care of itself, right? So things ramp up enough that, you know, conditioned mind's got me going, and I'm not getting enough oxygen in the body, right? So that's okay. The body knows what to do.
Yeah.
Take her out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Literally.
Take her out. The one who's
take
interfering with the breathing.
And guess what happens? The body breathes again.
Yes.
And this is
able to
start.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is we're so conditioned, I don't want to pass out.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. So what you're describing is really quite a beautiful description of it. I mean, wow, the hero's journey. Okay, if I need to pass out, I'll pass out. You know, trusting that the whole thing is going to unfold in the way that it needs to unfold.
Yeah.
You know? And that place, there's sort of an integration, I feel like, that you're talking about, you know, up at the mountain and then coming down up at the mountain, that it feels like there's a way in which what often will get our attention and kind of bring us to practice or remind us of the importance of practice is something big, you know, something that really gets our attention. We didn't expect it, you know, a tragedy or something that just jars us out of the system. And often, you know, we're willing to, all right, okay, uncle, I'm not in charge, you know, we kind of get back here. But there's a way in which, this is my experience anyway, that the integration that begins at that point, because that was a huge awareness, but I don't really yet have the training or the skill to live at that level of awareness. So then at some point it sort of collapses back down. And then what's required of us is to be in meditation when nothing's happening and I'm kind of bored and, you know, nothing's going on, and to count and to keep the attention here. But what's tricky about that is the stakes are so low at that point. Like, I don't really feel like it. And what's really going to be the point? I mean, who cares about going off to think about this and going, I can just come back and
Edit. Plus, I mean, right now I have to go do that thing, and I kind of want to work it out. I think it's a, in terms of my grid, I think I'm actually getting an insight about that. And I really want to track that.
You know what? Because then it could, and I could add this to it.
Yeah, I'm being informed right now. It's really helpful. which in another place it could be, but in meditation what we're doing is, so that's a little suspicion there. That,
Yeah, like,
no, abandon the breath and stick with it.
Exactly. And then what happens, you know, we go along like that, and then boom, we get hit with something that reminds us, oh wait, this takes aren't as low as I thought.
Right.
So, it's important. It's important. Yeah. But that sort of rubber banding seems like it just is a part of the process. Mm-hmm. It just is.
Yeah, and just in that last conversation that we're, you know, I just really heard that we're being guided and that we're ready when we're ready.
Exactly.
Jerry say, like, Buddhists take a long view of things in multiple lifetimes, so like there's just been a lot more patience for the person going for here, going through what they're going through. I mean, again, just to get it on a neurological level, we at least, you know, we can understand from science. Those things being paired, this sensation and this threat and this coping behavior over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, now what I've been doing is, even if there's just the tiniest, like, you know, it tried to get me to not do this thing, I commit, like, I want to do yoga every night. It's been amazing for the body. And but then it, you know, starts this little campaign, and well, it's late, and you're tired, and we have this reading commitment, and well, we should just want to just, I mean, you feel fine, and you know.
Thank you for the report on me.
Exactly. And just to identify, you know, that thing that we're always working on, what I am and what I'm not, and just to even just, I mean, what a miracle to go ahead and do the medicine or the yoga. And now I record about those things. Mm-hmm. Because the other thing is that it always, always gives all the attention to when I don't do something. Or I do something that's against the guidelines.
Or the just barely.
Right. And that gets all the attention, and it becomes the narrative. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I start to feel like I just don't have what it takes, and I don't have the tenacity, and I'm not really willing, and I believe all that. Mm-hmm. But if I, that's another great thing of recording and listening, if I'm recording all those moments, which I'm finding there are actually a lot of them, that becomes the narrative, because that's actually what's true.
Yeah.
Did I do those other things? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But this is also true, and it's true in a different way, because the framing of it is one of support and care, while the other one is designed to suffocate me, and to suffocate life, and to take everything for itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, well, let's look at the big picture here.
Yeah. Because it's part of it, right? So the timeline, quote, don't do it. A conditioned mind would like to have that be the center stage. And, or at very least, be sort of failures along the way. But to realize that if we look back at the integration thing, to realize that's part of it.
Absolutely
part of it.
Exactly.
And it takes me back to a conversation we had a few months ago, about someone talking about becoming a vegetarian and giving themselves, in that process, giving themselves permission to be present to how much I love animals, you know, cows. And so it feels like that, like, can we have the courage to be very, very present to the time when, quote, I don't do it? Because that's part of the process. It's not a mistake.
Yeah, the last piece on that, I've been looking at some mindfulness as an approach to addictions, and I was watching this video that was essentially kind of a medical version of what Sherry talks about, with, instead of trying to get yourself to stop doing something, go ahead and do it and just pay really close attention. And so they were doing this study on smoking, and they had people actually tune into their actual experience of the smoking and report on it as it was going. And just like one woman was like, this tastes disgusting. Like, and my lungs hurt. And so that place where we don't have to fight, as if, you know, we don't have to get rid of, we don't have to stop ourselves from being bad. All we have to do is pay attention. And that's a movement, a skill we can practice. And there was just these results of having that direct experience. It was like you had a completely different relationship with smoking now.
It makes complete sense. So what conditioning is doing is getting us to pit ourselves against ourselves. I want to, you can't. I want to, you can't. I want to, you can't. Instead of just being present to that actual experience. Letting life do all that.
Exactly. Oh man, that's really joyous. Just to step back and let life do all the heavy lifting.
Thank you. Perfect.
That's how I stopped drinking Coca-Cola.
Have you ever noticed how painful it is to drink?
And it goes up your nose.
Yes, and it burns. It's just really painful.
It's kind of like, well, actually, beer and cigarettes are two that people talk about. Like, it happens at a time in your life where you really want to fit in. So you work at.
Acquiring my taste for beer was a painful but successful.
But it wasn't so good when it was taken away. It feels like, oh, I love that.
So I'm kind of back on the incessant push to what you think you deserve on the karma. Because I had a real wake-up call this week that I'm still sort of reeling from in terms of this karma. So my son did something that seemed like the actions of a spoiled child. And so I've been looking at that. And I think I kind of spoiled him.
Spoiled child. I'm his mother.
Exactly. I'm sure in some way it's really my mother's fault.
But anyway. This might be like awareness.
No shame or blame. But
exactly.
Truly, it that did allow the space to really look, and several examples dropped in, but one that is particularly stunning to me was when he was about a junior in high school, just got his driver's license. We needed a new car, and I got a good deal on a luxury car. A really nice luxury car, thanks to my brother-in-law who worked for the new dealership. And I let him drive it. And I took the old Conker.
Interesting.
And the stunning thing was, I had really good reasons. I wanted him to have the safer car. Even though I had to realize this week, we lived 2 miles from the school. And he was a cross-country runner. There was really, no reason. But I wasn't even in the equation to have claimed the car.
So that wasn't even a factor.
It wasn't like, oh, I'd love to, but I really
want him to. He wanted him to be safe.
It wasn't even in the equation. That's that incessant push to what you think you deserve, but don't even realize. If it had been in the equation, it would be less stunning than the fact that it wasn't even there. There were several other examples too, but the common denominator is I didn't even get factored in. So there's that.
Huge to see. So invisible. The process being so invisible that at the time it wasn't even, what might be sort of obvious by some, the parent gets the good car and the child gets, it wasn't even considered. It wasn't that it was decided against. It wasn't that it was overridden. It just was invisible. Wasn't even there.
And you're saying that now, I'm remembering how I sent my daughter to Austria on a contract. It's like now the examples are, and didn't go on a vacation. It's like the examples are just flooding in of all these times when. I remember making a joke about it. I just don't think kids should have better vacations than their parents.
Except I guess I do.
And
And it makes me, of course, look at now, how might that be playing out now. Mm-hmm. And and there's a way in which I think, I don't know this at all, but what I'm suspecting is that there are times when Rebecca is actually still, surprisingly, amazingly, kind of calling out, and it gets labeled as ego.
That Rebecca is calling out for something. Oh, I see. Rebecca is like, hey, I gotcha. So the authentic Rebecca is basically attempting to say, hey, I'm over here. I need, want something. And then that gets pointed, well, that's ego. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it all makes such perfect sense in the karmic structure because just like it really made sense to me that he should have that car. Mm. You know, the gas, you know, I was driving further, it would use less gas, it made all perfect sense. Mm. It's just that the structure through which that is all making sense is the structure of karma.
Right. Right. Which makes it very hard to see. Mm-hmm. So if in a case where Rebecca is calling for something, it's like, it would be very hard to get clarity on that if the whole thing is being, it's kind of like Sequoia was pointing out earlier, never actually having a relationship with a person. It's all filtered through conditioned mind, same thing. It's all the decisions, the seeing, looking at something is filtered through the system that's already got it all set up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the place that I often find myself in these particular circumstances that I'm kind of wondering and looking at, is almost paranoid. Mm. I don't know. You know, and even taking it to guidance becomes a certain dance. Mm. You know, of, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, how many times can I say this and be, you know, we told it's karma, and you know, and yet there still seems to be there's something under it. Mm-hmm. You know that, mm-hmm. So it's all just very dense. Mm-hmm. It's not like a little confusing, but it's mostly just dense. It feels like there's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of things.
So if I track what you just said, that sounded like it was big. That so. What you realize is, of course, if everything's being filtered through this, everything's being filtered through this, including going to get guidance. And there's a way in which there's not a whole heck of a lot we can do about that, right? We realize there's a filter, and it's sort of like the addiction. The best we can do is be as present as we possibly can to what that filter is. But, of course, me trying to look around for the filter is going to be happening through the filter. And that, it feels like, well, that's okay. That's what we've got until we don't. But that it sounds like what you're saying is so going for guidance gets filtered through that also, and then a certain response comes, and a certain response, and how many times can I get that same response, and yet still have the thing come up, mm-hmm. and be willing to not dismiss that it's coming up.
Yes, exactly, because there's something there. It may not be being expressed exactly right, and then I project all kinds of like, oh, poor is winning and sharing. You know, they've got to be rolling their eyes like, oh my God, saying this again. You know?
Maybe they have a quick fill for that. Freeze person, no doubt. Maybe it's candy. They're very maybe it's candy. We so rarely ask for something out of character.
Template. and to be really willing for that eye rolling image to come up.
Oh my gosh! And forget it. That's internal.
Yes, I know.
You know that is internal, and to realize it's kind of like This is an extrapolation, so forgive me if the question this isn't on target, but that place where, you know, to realize my relationship with a mentor is being impacted by my conditioned relationship with my mother that never actually happened. Same kind of thing, right? To realize, this is something I look at all the time in my own practice, that eye rolling that happens internally is having a huge impact on how I am in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm attempting not to have them roll their eyes at me. They're not. Mm-hmm. It's all happening in here.
Yeah. Well, we just can't see it because it's on the phone.
Exactly. Or behind computers.
It just lobs those arguments over and over.
And you know, that place of, that I feel like so many people have pointed out this morning is, okay, so what if they were?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that feels like the biggest place we're being invited into. Can I be with this person?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that is sort of an argument that comes back to that eye rolling thing, is which is, well, they signed up for this too. You know, like nobody's forcing any of us to be in any of these roles, you know? So it really does put it on a level playing field. Like we're all playing our role.
And we hear that from everyone in practice.
Yes.
From the guy on down. This is my practice.
Exactly.
Right? I'm not doing this for you.
Exactly.
Right? This is
And we're all in this, you know, to do the same thing. That's all we're doing here. And so that is a helpful place I can get to combat that, you know, resistance, that eye rolling resistance. But it does, you know, and it does sort of at least open up the way for the so what. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm choosing unconditional love. I really want more. It's more like, I don't care. I'm choosing to participate in what I came here to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's good anyway. So it's just a rugged process sometimes.
It is hard. You know, it is hard. And it takes me a little bit back to the, you know, how did you just say it? Oh, I can't remember how you said it, but it feels like there can be that same process that we were looking at with Anna of, you know, you sat through it, barely. You know, that we don't get credit for how big it is, what we're doing, and that it is hard,
mm-hmm.
and that it is a lot, and that, you know, we're staying with it. We keep asking about it. I mean, that's kind of miraculous, you know, because this would have us give up, I project, you know, forget it. Forget it. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is completely abandoning this person. Which is not to say, you know, then the other side of duality is, no, I'm right, and I should have this, and I should, but that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
What it is there's just something. There's something here. And I'm going to stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rebecca's calling.
Mm-hmm.
Completely.
I mean, that really is kind of amazing that it's still hanging in there.
You know, I mean, a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
About a couple of minutes. Anyone have something to do?
So, the conversation about oh gosh, what was it about big things getting our attention,
mm-hmm.
and we really start focusing on practice.
Okay, I'll practice.
In the last, I know, 3 or 4 years, there have been some big two-night wars. Bam! And I always think of those as the big things that get my attention and cause me to practice. And I think I just got it. It's, you know, the biggest 2x4 is hidden in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I don't,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one.
Yeah.
And the reason why I know that it's the biggest one is how I fall for it,
mm-hmm.
so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is the most challenging place.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't know if this is a good metaphor, but when you were talking about it, what dropped in was, because the big ones hit us.
Yeah.
So they get our attention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the ones you're talking about, they just rub, right, against your face. And, you know, at first it's like, no big deal, right? I mean, it just, but over time it just wears on you. And yet, because it's always there, we don't really see it. We don't really see what's going on.
Yeah. There's the energy around it is really low,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so familiar,
yeah.
and so in that way helpful.
Yes,
that taking it down, going against what it says, just doesn't seem like any big deal. Not really against what it's saying.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like anything. No.
Yeah.
And the very fact that there are routines and processes in my life that haven't changed at all for a very long time is that's evidence that that's the place, mm-hmm. that's the karma,
mm-hmm.
that the karmic filter that is so invisible,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it's always there,
mm-hmm.
so it just doesn't get the attention. It doesn't trigger.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I now can't remember where I heard it, but I've talked about it a group a few times before where someone was talking about how, you know, the tricky part about watching movies of our heroes, even like Gandhi or Mandela, is that, you know, even if it's like Gandhi's 3 hours, it's a long movie, but it's still 3 hours, right? And so what you can't capture is the day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, over and over and over. Most days weren't, you know, big. Most days weren't
freeing India.
Exactly. Most days, you know, weren't Mandela being let out of prison.
God.
Right. And so we just, at least for me, I can forget that that's everyone's experience. You know, that death by a thousand cuts kind of place. And so, and it is hard because it doesn't, as you say, the energy is low. So it doesn't, it's a little hard to muster that, like, all right, I am going to, whatever it is, this tiny little thing. But it is huge. It is huge. It's really the biggest thing we're up against, in a sense.
It is. And again, because it never changes,
yeah.
that's evidence that it's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's always there,
yeah.
and it hasn't changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it hasn't changed much.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. And just, you know, to me, calls for that place of, okay, so it is a big deal, so let's treat it like a big deal.
Yeah.
So when I do it once, let's throw a giant party. And when I do it again, let's throw another, you know, just all of those things of recognizing that it's a big deal, you know, because that's where it's going to get minimized. Oh, great, well, you mean so what? So you did that once, big deal. It's not a big deal. It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's a huge deal.
And, you know, for years, I hear monks talk about going about practicing in that very place. And, it's always inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't show up in this light, away from this room.
Yeah, well, just one quick thing, and I know we do have to go, but
yeah.
One thing you might look at in that is the projection. Because, of course, you sit in this room and you hear that thing, but what you don't do is go back to the hermitage.
with the monk over and 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 watch how it doesn't happen, and it does happen, and it doesn't, it does, and it doesn't, and it does, and it does, and it doesn't, it doesn't, it doesn't, it does, and it doesn't, and it doesn't, and it does, 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 right? So the projection that it's kind of like the movie. You know, we're only in here, what, 2 hours out of how many hours are in a week? I can't remember. But so the projection that there isn't that same process happening internally for each person, you know, that I think it's the AA thing. Don't judge your insides better than people's outsides. Because, you know, I always talk about this on my own recordings. One of the things I love about listening back to recordings is that I hear myself talking in a way that inspires me, that I wasn't inspired when I made the recording, because when I made the recording, I'm privy to the simultaneous track, yeah, but I mean, you didn't really, I mean, you sort of, yeah, you kind of stayed through it, but you didn't really, blah, 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 blah. But when I listen back to it, all I hear is this person talking without the sidetrack. So to me, that's what happens to us in group, is we're hearing each other talk about this stuff, but we're not hearing the internal garbage that goes with it. So we get so inspired because we see ourselves in each other's much, we see the clear process that's happening for each other, and we don't see all the garbage that goes with it. But the garbage that goes with it is there for each of us. So we're all up against that same, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I project what we're told is, yeah, but see, it's not clear like theirs is. So, this one's flavor. All right, thank you all.